ladies and gentlemen, sorry about that. We had a giant crash of something, which I don't know what it was, but we're back now. Anyway, let me go to the subject of talking about what happened with the judge who ordered release of Guantanamo detainee. Sorry you didn't all hear it. I'm going to repeat this. If you did hear it once, well, it's worth repeating. A judge ordered the release of a Guantanamo Bay detainee described in the 9/11 Commission report as a significant Al-Qaeda operative who provided advice to three of the September 11th hijackers. The ruling in favor of the detainee, his last name is Mohammed Salahi, same name as the people who snuck into the White House, what a coincidence, was disclosed Monday in a two-sentence court entry. Two sentences, that's it. I think what has happened here is the judge, U.S. District Judge James Robertson, issued a written decision saying this man's going to be released. There is no evidence to hold him. No evidence to hold him. He supposedly gave directions to three people as to how to find Afghanistan. I can't believe this story. I really can't. But that's what they're saying, that he gave three people direction on how to find Afghanistan. And so that right there tells you that because it was Muhammad Atta, Ziad Zahra, Marwan al-Shehhi, and Ramzi bin al-Shib, four people, excuse me, that helped coordinate 9/11, that he is guilty. Well, this doesn't make any sense. There was a Lieutenant Colonel Stuart Couch, who is a former military prosecutor, who basically refused to prosecute this man. Refused. And he had to go to another job. They dropped the prosecution, and now the judge says, I'm going to order him released. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what they're going to do to him, but I'm telling you, the 9/11 theory, the government's conspiracy theory, is falling apart. No one is being, I mean, you would think in the greatest criminal trial of the world, we would be watching it on crime TV or something, but we're not. We're not seeing it. We're not hearing anything about it. They're just kind of gradually saying, oh, and by the way, there's a two-sentence statement to release this guy. I'll tell you why later on. That's what James Robertson said. I'll issue a written statement later on telling you why I'm letting this man go. This is huge. This is absolutely huge. Well, we're going to be talking in the next hour to our guest who's going to help us understand what in the world is going on. Maybe she'll have some feelings about this. I don't know. But we're going to talk to Dr. Judy Wood in the next hour and then Andrew Johnson in the hour after that. So stay tuned to the Power Hour. With that in mind, we want to get to the bottom of what happened. Now, remember, she says thermite was not used in the building. You know what? The building didn't happen the way they said it happened. That's really all we need to know. But she is a real big promoter of having factual evidence, and we need to find out what she has to say. So anyway, back to that story. Guantanamo, they were going to release the guy. They have no evidence. Duh. John, do we have any callers? Do we have any callers? Helen in Oklahoma. Helen, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Good morning. I have a new use for BioGreen Clean.
Oh, good.
I had seen an ant on the floor now and then when I would go to the bathroom. Wondered where they were coming from. One day, Kenneth went in there. They were all over the windowsill, around on the wood, terribly, and he could only find one thing, and he grabbed the sprayer and sprayed them.
Whoa.
It was where I had a mixture of BioGreen Clean. Half and half.
Awesome. Hey, stay right there. I want you to stay on the line because I want to talk to you during the break. Stay there, Helen. We'll be right back. I tried to get a hold of you this past weekend, even. So I'll talk to you right after this during the break. Welcome back to the Power Hour, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us. I want to tell you the action item. We didn't talk about the action item earlier, and I didn't talk about it yesterday. And I thank some of you for reminding me. And the action item is, this time we're going to read one proverb every day. One proverb every day. That is because the Proverbs, there's 31 of them, and that way we have one for every day of the month. Today's, the 23rd, is amazing. When you sit down to eat with a ruler, look what is before you. Put a knife to your throat if a man is given to appetite. Do not desire his delicacies, for that food is deceptive. Do not labor to be rich. Cease from your own understanding. And it says, do not eat the bread of one having an evil eye, nor desire his delicacies, for he reckons in his life, so is he. Eat and drink, he says to you, but his heart is not with you. Do not speak. It's really amazing. It talks about don't be a gluttonous person with meat. I just find this so amazing, talking about discipline. So I wanted to share that with you. That just happens to be today's. So don't overeat meat. And what it basically is talking about is, you know, the rulers who have all the food at their disposal will try to give you junk food. Isn't that true? They try to impress you with all the fancy desserts and all. But don't be given to the gluttonous eating of the kings and of the elite. That's what it's all about. So what we have to do is we have to find out what is food for us. And what is food is anything, like Josh was saying, that doesn't have a label on it, doesn't have any kind of, you know, listing of the ingredients. That's what real food is. We're going to change the subject now to talk to Dr. Judy Wood. She is a PhD. She is a former professor of mechanical engineering and research. And her interests are in experimental stress analysis, structural mechanics, optical methods, deformation analysis, and the materials characterization of biomaterials and composite materials. All things I know nothing about, absolutely nothing about. She has a BS degree in civil engineering, in structural engineering, that she got in 1981, a master's in engineering mechanics, applied physics, and a PhD in materials engineering science that she received from Virginia Polytechnic Institute and State University of Blacksburg, Virginia. Now, I bring her on because her interest is 9/11. She had a real awakening. She calls it a Hiroshima, not a Pearl Harbor. She's been very well known for speaking out, and she's also come under fire by a lot of people for her beliefs. She does not believe that thermite was the cause of the building collapse. So we're going to talk to her about what her beliefs are and how she supports that. We want to get to the bottom of what the evidence is. That's all we care about, is what is the evidence. And I believe that is the same as Dr. Judy Wood. Thank you, Dr. Wood, for joining us in the Power Hour today.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Well, let's talk about, you have come under all kinds of fire by all kinds of people for your sort of, deviating from the position that most of the 9/11 people are taking. What is the conventional theory that most people go by, and then how do you deviate from that?
Well, I don't look at what other people look at. I don't look at what other people believe in. I just look at the evidence.
Okay.
If I have a theory, my theory is, let's go look at the evidence. Let's see what the evidence tells us. Because I believe that I believe that if you listen to the evidence carefully enough, it will tell you exactly what happened. If you don't know what happened, keep listening to the evidence until you do.
All right, I can agree with that. I think anybody can agree with that. But I think what we have now is a dispute over what the evidence is, because David Ray Griffin and a number of people are making their statements about what happened. You, on the other hand, sort of have a different position. Let's talk about what the position is of Dr. Judy Wood.
Well, for the record, I don't believe that our government is responsible for executing the events of 9/11, nor do I believe our government is not responsible for executing the events of 9/11. This isn't a case of belief. This is a crime that should be solved by a forensic study of the evidence. Before it can be determined who did it, it must be determined what was done and how it was done. And any crime investigation needs to go in that order. So let's look at what happened. That's what you first need to look at before you go to the how and the who. And so my first question is, when you look at the scene, where did the buildings go? And that is a crucial question. Reporters were asking that question on day one and on day two. Why did they stop asking that question? And why did the rest of us stop asking that question?
Okay, so you say one of the major questions is, where did the buildings go?
Yes, the 7 o'clock in the morning of 9/11, there were two towers standing there. And then they went away. The material itself went away. Before noon, we're told all sorts of stories, but it was shipped to China. But as soon as the dust cleared, before noon on 9/11. There's photos from various angles by various different photographers. Where's the debris? It's street level. And then there's people who go down below street level, and it's hollow down there. Anybody down there? You could hear an echo.
Now, wait a minute. Didn't we see all this debris that had fallen down? Didn't we picture that and watch them clean it up?
First of all, they call it a pile, so you think that there's a pile. You know, it works from the subconscious. Word choice is important.
Okay.
For our perceptions. This is how we work as humans. And so if you call it a pile, but then this pile got taller with time. They trucked in dirt. That's another interesting thing. But if you just look at all of the evidence, you just go there and you look. You don't, you know, set out to find the answer or to, you know, here's a choice of answers, eeny, meeny, miny, mo, you know, pick and choose. No, you just go and look. You know, feel the area, taste it, smell it, you know, just experience it. So the first thing you notice is that when the dust clears, standing at the street level, you can see completely across the site, east to west.
Okay.
At street level.
I'll grant you that, yes. All right, well, so what does that mean then? We're talking about a building which was pulverized, which allegedly fell down into its footprint, is what we're told.
Right.
With thermite charges, that was a electronic engineering feat to bring down that building in its footprint.
Well, if you cut up a building like for controlled demolition, the building still needs to come down. We don't see the evidence of a building having come down.
So you're saying that it wasn't just pulverized building that we see at the bottom of that?
No, pulverized is different than, you know, like turning to dust or turning to chunks. If you go to, you know, controlled demolition in Las Vegas, what you see is, you know, they cut a building up and they slam it to the ground to break it up. They don't, the explosives are just to take it off its support so they can then drop to the ground. And the slamming onto the ground is what breaks it up.
Okay.
And so these cut the building into several pieces, and then as the pieces come down, they break up.
And you're saying that did not happen according to your evidence in the situation with the Twin Towers.
Correct. Did you see entire sections of building, you know, falling and then breaking up once it hit the ground?
No, I don't know that I saw really a whole lot of other than just dust in the air is all we saw.
Right. How does a solid piece of material in mid-flight turn into dust? Explosives, when they break something up, you get chunks go flying.
Okay.
They break into chunks. The chunks don't change mid-flight. They change at the source. They change, you know, when something explodes, it breaks into chunks. The chunks go flying, and then chunks land. But on 9/11, we had, you know, large sections of wall flying that never hit the ground because looking at them, they like dissolved into dust like ice cream melting.
Oh, I see. You're saying it dissolved into dust in midair before it hit the ground, which should have then broken it apart into the dust.
Right.
Okay.
But air doesn't cause that much resistance to pulverize a building or to dustify it.
Well, are they not saying that it was explosions that separated it into pieces or into very small pieces like dust, that it pulverized it or created the dust, the explosions?
But you have a solid piece that leaves the building.
All right.
And then turns into powder.
Okay. All right. What other reasons do you see, other than that it defies the law of physics, obviously, with what you're just saying right now, help us also see other reasons that tell you that there was not thermite in the building? Because obviously the question everybody's asking is, what was it then if it wasn't thermite or explosions that brought the building down?
If thermite doesn't explode. Thermite melt, you know, they use it to weld railroad tracks, or the military actually uses it for a couple things. One is to burn paper. Did you see a lot of burned paper all over southern Manhattan that day?
Well, yeah, it was everywhere.
Unburned paper.
Correct. Oh, yeah, unburned paper, yes.
Right. The military uses thermite to burn paper.
Okay. I'm not an expert on thermite, know nothing about it, so I'm kind of at your, you're going to have to tell us what you think happened here. We're going to be right back after this 4-minute break. Stay tuned to the Power Hour. Grab something to drink. Come right back. We'll be back in 4 minutes with the Power Hour. This is Joyce Riley. I don't know what's going on, but we seem to have been able to not be able to keep a connection here. I don't know what's going on. I understand the program's been going in and out everywhere today. It's just not holding, and for some unknown reason, we've got some interference here. So let me just go ahead with Dr. Judy Wood and see if we can go as far as we can into this discussion. And if it doesn't work, well, we're just going to have to let it go and go to a replay because I'm not quite sure what's happening here. Anyway, we're talking to Dr. Judy Wood, who is an engineer. She has been involved in all kinds of well-applied physics issues. And so she comes to us saying that there's something wrong with the story, the prevailing story of thermite bringing down the building. She said, number one, that where did the building go? It just sort of evaporated into dust.
Not evaporated.
Okay. Not evaporated, but I mean, us looking at it, we would think that it sort of went into just dust. Then.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
It became dust. All right. And what other reasons do you support the fact that there was something else going on in the building?
Well, I don't start with what's wrong with another story. I look at what do I see? What is the story? In a traumatic event, in a traumatic situation, humans tend to go with the herd. When you're on the street, you hear someone yell, "Get down on the ground! Get down on the ground!" You do it immediately. You don't stop and ask why or ask questions if it's unreasonable. You just do it. You run with the herd.
Mm-hmm.
And once you have something in your mind, especially from such a traumatic event, you're not going to look back and rethink it because that's reliving the event. And who would want to do that? So whatever gets planted in people's minds immediately is what sticks. You know, first impressions stick.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I tend to try to look at stuff with a blank slate. Let's just clear the slate. Not, pick at this quote theory and that theory. Let's not have a theory. Let's just look at the evidence. What do we know? We know the towers aren't there anymore. There were two towers, and then they went away. And then you start looking at things more and more and more evidence, and the story comes together. It's just an enormous story. If you were busy looking at thermite or looking at, looking for nukes, you miss everything else. Because you're looking for an answer, so you have tunnel vision on that for that answer. And then also, if that is on your mind, you have a bias for it.
All right. Now, isn't it true, though, that they're saying that there was evidence of thermite found in the building?
The building turned to dust. They're powderized, whatever you call it. It's a new phenomenon, so it needs a new word. So I like dustify. I want to see that in the dictionary. The building was dustified. So if you sample any dust, if 100% of everything in the building from, the 20th store up turned to dust, if you find dust from that building, you're going to find all sorts of things in that dust. You're going to find traces of chocolate, traces of sugar, and traces of nanoweed, flour. And does that mean the chocolate chip cookies were involved? The building was made out of, it was a steel frame building with aluminum cladding. So if you dustify steel, it instantly rusts, so you have rust. And if the building had aluminum cladding on it that was turned to dust, you have aluminum powder. Aluminum powder and iron oxide is what thermite is.
All right, so
if you have those ingredients, that's what the building's made out of.
Okay, the components of thermite were found in the building then. So you're saying that because components of thermite were found does not necessitate that thermite was found.
Exactly.
All right, okay.
If you have a dust baggie with a zillion things that were in the building, traces of all sorts of things in that dust baggie, how do you know what was mixed with what?
Mm-hmm. All right, good point. Let's talk about the other reasons that support your idea that something else happened, and then we need to talk about what that something else was after this 3-minute break. Then we're going to take some phone calls from those of you out there who are 9/11 experts. If you would like to ask Dr. Wood a question or have a comment, she goes against the prevailing theory of what we've learned, even by 9/11 people. Doesn't go against. She says she uses her own documentation. Back in 3 minutes. Stay tuned. Back to the Power Hour. Thank you for joining us. 33 minutes after the hour. This is Joyce Riley. Thank you for being part of the Power Hour today, part of the Power Hour team. We're talking to Dr. Judy Wood about 9/11. She has a different concept or different finding based on the documentation that she has, and she's all about evidence, and there's nobody that can not appreciate that. Let me just remind you quickly, though, that we've got specials at the Power Hour. All the garden books are on special, all of them. There's lots of them, so take advantage of getting them from the Power Hour, please. If you're going to be doing a garden, getting started in growing, we've got all kinds of literature here. Also, I just need to remind everybody that we cannot do research for you. We have a lot of people that will call and say, would you look up such and such and tell me about this? Would you, you know, we try to be an answer. We try to be answers for you on subjects, but we can't do your research. We just can't. We don't have the people, the phone lines. Those are for orders only. And then if you are asking your questions about whatever it is, then they can't take orders from other people, and they don't get their orders in, and they get upset. So that's order line only, the 877 number. Just remember, and we can't patch people up with previous guests. We can't get in contact for them with you or with you for them. We can't do that. We need you to appreciate that. Lauren, I know everybody wants to get in contact with Lauren, wants her email address. She doesn't have an email address. So we're going to have Lauren on very soon, and we're just going to let her take your calls, and that way maybe it'll answer all your questions. You can ask Lauren yourself. Also, the hand nebulizer. People are getting confused about the hand nebulizer, and they're thinking it's not working if they don't see something or feel something squirting out. This is a very, very small, micro kind of nebulizer. If you use the nebulizer, it goes into your lungs. You're not going to feel anything. Unless you're using something like thieves oil, then you will feel something. But if you're using silver, you're not going to feel anything. So we've had a couple of people saying their units are broken. They're not broken. That's just the way they work. You don't feel anything. You just have to know that it is going into your lungs if you're using the nebulizer. So just enough said for that. We're going to get back. But anyway, to get a nebulizer or to get anything we have at the Power Hour, including the hanging food pantry, and read about the guest this Friday. Pretty amazing information. I'll tell you tomorrow who's going to be on Friday because it's going to take some time, but it's going to be amazing. I think you're going to be really astounded at this information. So let's get back to Dr. Judy Wood, the story of 9/11 as she sees it. Now, if we drop off the line, just forgive us. We're going to have to go to a replay, but we're going to try and stay on as long as we can. Dr. Wood, you say the building just dustified. All right, what other reason, what other evidence do you have to say that something else took place or to direct it toward what you believe took place?
Well, again, I don't go by beliefs. I go by what the evidence says. And one of the mistakes people often make is, okay, what's the answer? What's the answer? The answer is 7? Oh, well, you don't know how to add 1 plus 1. Well, if you're not looking at what's being added, then you can't understand the answer of 7. What I do is look at all of the evidence. So let's look. We have around the perimeter of the building, buildings with round holes in their windows, circular holes, not spider web patterns. If you throw something through a window, like a baseball, you get a spider web looking pattern. This looks like a glass cutter cut out a circular spot, and it's the outer pane of a double pane window where the inner pane is still intact. That is evidence of longitudinal waves. I don't even think a glass cutter could make such a nice hole.
Okay, what does longitudinal wave mean to those of us that are not engineers?
As opposed to a transverse wave, let's see, if you, you know, if you get a slinky, you know, and some, or a, like a jump rope and somebody's wiggling it up and down, that's a transverse wave. If you stretch a rubber band and let go of it and it snaps, that's a longitudinal wave.
Okay.
And most things make, you know, the jump rope, you know, back and forth kind of wave when they travel. Also, we have flipped cars. Cars upside down next to trees with full foliage, which is kind of peculiar, right next to a car that's like totally toast. What I mean by toast is it's history. It's toast. There's something happened to it. The material has been disrupted. So we have lift or disruption right in spots adjacent to each other, which is kind of peculiar. And then this occurs up to a half mile or so away. So why would cars be toasted next to paper that's unburned?
Okay.
It's another peculiar thing. And there, and also these spots on cars where, you know, it's brand-new wax job in mint condition, and this immediately, you know, 1 nanometer over, you have totally toasted material, disrupted material. A conventional fire cannot do that. You don't have, you know, a line of demarcation like that. Also, it seems to affect particular materials, like an engine block, totally dustified, where the rest of the car is intact. Tires are still, you know, inflated. There's just really weird things like that. Door latches and door handles were one of the first things to go. So you see a lot of pop trunk lids. There's people talked about being levitated.
Who talked about being levitated?
Various first responders.
Okay, I never heard anything about that.
They don't use that word. They say lifted up.
All right.
And carried, or slammed against a wall, or you know, they're not sure how they got wherever. Somebody thought that they were had died and were being carried off to heaven when they're getting moved from one place to another. There's a guy who, when Tower 2 was going away, dove under an emergency vehicle for safety. And then when things got real quiet, he thought he was buried and trapped. But he looked up, and there was sky right above him. Where'd the emergency vehicle go that he dove under? He just was gone.
Okay, these are all things that I'm taking for granted that you're saying, because I don't know them to be fact. I never heard any of this information, which doesn't mean it's not true. It just means I have never heard this. I got an email from Dan who says there was a layer of dust that was comprised of aerosolized concrete, glass, steel, and human biologicals. It all aerosolized and drifted all over Manhattan. Is that something you recognize as being true or not?
Yes, the building was completely dustified, and it wafted up, down the East Coast. It went up into, you know, maybe even the upper atmosphere. And when I was, looking at and studying how far up this dust went, I started looking at weather satellite images to get a better look, and then, oh, my gosh, there's this huge Category 3 hurricane right outside of New York City. Did you realize that? On 9/11, there was a big hurricane.
No, I'd never heard of that. I mean, now we're getting into some areas that make me wonder, because I've never heard of that.
It's easily verifiable.
Okay, how do we do that?
Well, I've got plenty of pictures of it on my website, but, you know, National Hurricane Center. It was called Hurricane Aaron. It was the longest-lived hurricane. The biggest hurricane of the season, and it was a more energetic system than Hurricane Katrina.
Okay. All right. Now, give us your other best estimates of evidence, because I'm going to need to go to the callers, and there's some people that are emailing me saying that they are not believing this and not able to accept this information.
People can't accept that the towers went away. But, it's... how do you establish that the towers are God? It's not a question of belief. I only deal with scientific evidence. And, for example, the Earth's magnetic field shifted precisely at the moments, you know, it built up, and then precisely at the moments things happened, like when the towers went away and so forth. There's some really strange things that just you have to keep looking at the evidence to see this, rather than what answers you're looking for. You don't look for the answers you want. You just look at what the evidence tells you. Another thing, if you know something is brought down by some kind of force, you look at the materials, the last remaining walls. I call them wheat checks. They look like wheat checks. The prefab units of three columns wide by three stories tall, they were standing straight like soldiers. Those last ones on the ground,
uh-huh,
at ground level. That's not what things look like when they're weak and buckled. When things are buckled, they bend around the horizontal axis. They sort of bow down.
Okay. All right, let me go to a couple of callers right now because they've been waiting so long. Richard in Texas, you're on the air with Dr. Judy Wood. Go ahead, please, Richard.
UFOs, we can't blame it on aliens or anybody else. It's hard to believe that guys with box cutters that live in caves have all this technology. The one building didn't even fall by an airplane. It's hard to believe that there wasn't some desk and some other things around that weren't tore up.
Well, nobody's mentioned anything about aliens. We're not talking about aliens, to my knowledge.
Well, I heard there was one report that come through that there was a flying saucer over the building. It was in a picture or something. You hear all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, but, I mean, we're not talking about that now because she's talking about evidence here, and the evidence is that she says that things dustified, that they did not fall in a natural progression according to physics. And if they had, there would have been chunks of stuff, like you were just talking about desks,
et cetera. Well, I heard there was molten metal. No, that wasn't powder.
Okay, molten metal, which is said to have been found at the bottom. And we have the picture of that called the blob or whatever it was. I think we have seen that picture. Now, are you familiar with that, Dr. Wood, the molten metal at the bottom of the building?
I've not seen any pictures of molten metal. They can be established as molten metal. One thing that to be careful of is, you know, all things that glow, I mean, things that are hot glow, but not all things that glow are hot.
Okay.
Let's compare a fluorescent light bulb with an incandescent bulb. They both put out light. One's hot and one's not. Things glow
okay.
for different reasons. Room temperature luminescence is a phenomenon that you see there. You have people walking through stuff that's glowing, and paper isn't burning. So, you know, people aren't worried about their pants catching on fire. So, this myth of, you know, hot molten metal, you don't store molten metal at the bottom of your swimming pool. And we had all sorts of fire hoses. There was even a water main that broke on 9/11, and the whole street flooded, and then some, and it looked like a lake. So how do you have molten metal at the bottom of a lake?
Okay.
You'd have a steam explosion.
Okay, let me go back to Richard. Richard, are you still there?
Sure.
Okay, what are your thoughts then thus far?
Well, my thoughts is they were big buildings. I've stood under them when they were up. They were tremendous buildings. And when you leave New York, you could see them in your rear view mirror. They were tremendous buildings. It's hard to believe that people that live in caves that are primitive people are doing all these things, especially with one building that the plane didn't hit. I don't know whether we listen to what she has to say. Maybe some truth in this, maybe some truth in the other people's thoughts. We all have our opinion. But we know that there's either an explosion or an implosion. Something happened there to bring them down. Now, whether they were powder or whatever, it's hard to believe that people that live in caves are doing all this kind
of
stuff.
Yeah, no kidding. I think your point is well taken, that people living in caves with a fax machine maybe, that doesn't make any sense. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, but I'm not going up by belief of who did what. That's down the road. First, you have to establish what happened.
Okay, Richard, thank you very much for the phone call. Let me go to Larry in Texas before we get to what you think happened. Larry in Texas, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Is she familiar with the A&E 9/11 truth?
Yeah, I'll let you answer. Go ahead.
Yes, I am familiar with that organization.
Okay. Do you know about the thermite that was dug out of the buildings across the street just a couple years ago by the BYU professor?
I don't think there's any evidence that it can be tied to, there. And what does that evidence explain, why the buildings turned to powder and didn't hit the ground?
Well, I believe I saw the buildings leaning over like Tower of Pisa there for a while, wouldn't it?
But they didn't hit the ground.
Right. Are you familiar with The Last Man Out, Richard Rodriguez's information about the explosions?
I focus on physical evidence, and that is what my federal case I submitted to court.
Yeah, I failed to mention that you had a whistleblower case against NIST in which you alleged that there was some fraud in their report and that you were a quitom whistleblower. That went to the Supreme Court, you asked for a writ of certiorari in January, and it was denied. So you are the one that's gone forward with your evidence to NIST, the National Institute of, what is that, NIST?
The National Institute of Standards and Technology, but I did not, the case is not against them, it's against the contractors who defrauded the American people.
And how did they defraud the American people?
Science fraud. I go down the list, there's a list of 23 of them. Underwriters Lab, for example, built mock-ups of the floor, the entire floors, set them on fire for twice as long, for twice as high a temperature, and at 4 out of 4 times they could not get it to fail to support load. Yet they signed off on a report saying fire did it. That's fraud.
Okay.
And the two main contractors are manufacturers and developers of energy weapons. One of them has a government contract to know about any weapon of mass destruction that exists on the planet or is being developed on or off the planet.
Okay, let me just say to Larry in Texas. Larry, we're going to get to what she believes to be the reason.
No, this is a belief.
All right.
Yeah.
What she says her belief is. All right. What did you want to, Larry, did you want to say anything else?
Yeah, just two more things. Her explanation of why Building 7 may have came down and how they tried to BS us into believing that jet fuel done this. And if jet fuel was so powerful, why wouldn't it melt the jet engine?
Okay, good point.
That's what I'd said years ago. I'd say, well, do you feel drip, drip, drip of, melted engine as it flies overhead? that's a good one. But do you know that we didn't have three towers that collapsed that day? We had 7 buildings that went away that day.
Okay, 7 buildings that went away that day. We'll be right back after this 3-minute break. Thank you very much, Larry from Texas. We'll cover jet fuel and Building 7 after this break. Stay tuned with Dr. Judy Wood. Welcome back to Power Hour. Thank you for joining us. We're having a bit of a contentious discussion here between some people who believe and who don't believe what Dr. Judy Wood says. Now, I'm open. See, I don't have a dog in this fight other than I want the truth. I'm just like her. I want to know what the evidence shows, what the documentation shows. That's what we're all about. And if it has to be a little bit painful to get to the truth, well, let it be painful because I want to get there. And I can listen to somebody for an hour present a whole different side of explanation. All right. Now, Dr. Wood, let's talk about Building 7. You said there were other buildings that came down also, but specifically since...
That went away.
Okay.
The key about Building 7 is that it didn't come down. There's no seismic signal that was really detectable from background noise. Yeah.
It just went away. The building didn't come down. I think this is where people are going to lose you right now. And saying we watched it on TV and we watched the building come down, Building 7.
Actually, you saw it all afternoon with fumes coming out of it. I won't call it smoke because it's going to lead us to think fire.
But we've seen how the building came down.
We saw the building, the silhouette of a building go away.
Okay, well,
that
go away.
That doesn't mean we saw an entire building.
Are you saying that somebody took a magic wand and made it go away?
No. Let's look at the evidence. We had this building putting out fumes all afternoon for, what, 7 hours or so? What was in that? That was a very dense material pouring out of that building.
Well, I don't know about that. Here again, you're asking us to deal with a fact I'm not aware of. I never heard about fumes coming out of a building. I'll tell you what, let me go to Steve in Florida. Steve in Florida, you're on the air. Go ahead, please, with Dr. Judy Wood.
Hi, Joy. Thank you for taking my call. Am I
sure.
loud and clear?
Yeah, you are. Go ahead.
Judy, you have misrepresented the facts concerning Hurricane Aaron. I live here in Hurricane Country, Florida. I track all the hurricanes. Aaron hit Corpus Christi, Texas, 15 August 2007. Your opinion concerning 911 are not consistent with the facts provided on 911 ripple effect, last man out, Richard Gage's blueprint for truth, loose change final cut, Zero, an investigation into 911, and many other video documentaries. I don't know what planet you've come from.
Okay, wait, Steve. We don't need to go quite that far. The point is, we are listening to information here, and we're trying to come to a conclusion. But you're mentioning some things that, you know, give her one statement at a time that you'd like for her to address. Okay. I guess he's gone. I don't know what happened to Steve.
As for Hurricane Aaron, they did not retire that name. It has been used several times. It was used before 2001 and after 2000, but it was the biggest storm of the 2001 season, the first hurricane, I believe, of the 2001 hurricane season.
Well, I'd like for Steve to call back because I would like to get his thoughts on the air. I just don't want to tack with, you know, what planet are you from? That's not relative to what we're talking about here. We want to deal with facts. Now, let me just go to another email here. When a lake evaporates, it gases off and on, and it's gases off and goes into the air. Its molecular structure is transformed. When concrete, steel, and glass is aerosolized, its molecular structure is transformed. The buildings were transformed. This is from Dan. He says they didn't just disappear or go away, as the guest seems to suggest, but were in essence evaporated into the air, in which the firefighters and other rescuers then breathed in and are now suffering from.
I did not say they disappeared as in, or vaporized. I say dustified. We need a new word for a new phenomenon. The buildings turned to dust through molecular dissociation. They were dustified.
Okay, through molecular dissociation. All right, we're going to be right back after this break. We've got George from Canada coming up here. He wants to add his 2 cents. So stay tuned to the Power Hour. We'll be back in 1 minute, 10 seconds. Welcome back to Power Hour. I don't want to miss any time here because I want to hear from Dr. Judy Wood and you. It's 9 o'clock. This is Joyce Riley. This is the Power Hour. We're talking about 9/11. Let me just say that Dr. Judy Wood is a PhD in engineering. She's got a lot more credentials than I do. I am just interested in what she has to say. So many of you have asked to have her on the program. Lots of requests to have Dr. Judy Wood on. She's now here. Now, don't berate me because I'm bringing on a guest that you don't agree with. If you don't agree with her, we walk away and say, you know what? That was an hour of which, well, I just don't agree with her. That's okay. But we don't have to get mean about it. And Steve, you're a wonderful person and I love you very much, Steve from Florida. But, you know, let's just try and get down to what the fact is. Now, before we go to George in Ontario, let me ask you this question then. If it was not the thermite or the explosions or the planes that brought down the tower, what does your evidence show you, Dr. Wood?
The evidence must be explained. If somebody wants to hide the evidence, they call it names. They call it a theory. No, evidence is evidence. It's not synonymous with theory. The evidence shows that energy fields, a high-tech form of weaponry that we haven't seen before, was used. I don't know the serial numbers. I don't know whose weapon this was, but it is the same technology that was brought about 100 years ago by Nikola Tesla. all of the evidence is the same, and it's been reproduced, and it's falsifiable, so it's very scientific if somebody needs those terms.
And, okay.
And so what you start out is looking at the evidence. Don't look at beliefs. This isn't about beliefs. This is about what evidence we can establish. And we had not three towers, you know, fall. We had seven buildings destroyed that day. Four of them were skyscrapers, and all four skyscrapers went away. That's what I say, they went away. I'm not saying they disappeared. They're no longer standing. That, I think, we can establish. They went away, and they turned to dust. They became dust. We can see that. And there's all sorts of evidence that establishes that, including the seismic signal. The seismic signal for Building 7 is essentially non-existent. How do you have a seven-story building explode, crash, whatever you want to call it, and not make a seismic signal?
Now, that's a good point. There should have been a seismic signal, just like there was when Oklahoma City bombing occurred. There were two seismic signals on that tape when I went out to the university to get a copy of it right after it happened. So you're saying that this is some type, I don't want to be putting words in your mouth. Is this some type of directed energy weapon that you're talking about here?
Yeah, my definition, because I don't, you know, before I started this, I'd never heard of directed energy weapons. I didn't know what they were, but the evidence told me they exist. I don't know what to call this thing. I don't, of course, know its serial numbers, but it's energy that is directed and is used as a weapon. That is my generic description. I'm not talking about ray beams from space. I'm not talking about lasers from space or masers and, you know, ray guns. No, this is an energy field. It's field effects. It's interference of energy fields.
So you're saying it was some type of energy weapon that did the damage to these buildings then, these seven buildings. Okay, let me go to George in Canada. I don't know that I have much time, but I'll hold you all through the break. George, go ahead, please. You're on the air with Dr. Wood.
Good morning, Joyce.
Morning.
Well,
George Freund.
Yes, indeed. I take issue to a couple of things you said. Is there was something about burning metals being underwater and not burning. Burning metals are a Class D fire, not an A, B, or C. Burning metals do burn underwater. Divers can weld underwater. Phosphorus burns in your flesh if you've ever had a phosphorus bomb go off in you, and you know, you have to be put in a sort of an oil substance to be operated on because it's a burning metal.
Okay,
I didn't say burning metals. I said, you know, like rivers of molten metal, you don't store molten metal at the bottom of your swimming pool.
Okay, we'll be right back after this 3-minute break. We've got George Freund from Canada, and we have Dr. Judy Wood. And we're going to try to get to the bottom of this, then we'll get to our next guest in just a few minutes after we answer some more questions. We'll be back. Stay tuned to the Power Hour. Welcome back to the Power Hour. This is Joyce Riley, 8 minutes after the hour. Thank you for joining us. We are talking about 9/11. A little bit different story coming from Dr. Judy Wood. A little bit different evidence, if you will, or questions being asked. And, you know, I don't know the answers. So, you know what? I'm very appreciative of people who have more credentials than I than share information. Now, I may accept it. I may not. But I really appreciate the information being shared today. We have also on the phone with us George Freund. Now, George, what is your issue, whether it's not it's a molten metal burning underwater, but what is your issue with what Dr. Wood is saying?
Well, if you're going to represent facts, the facts have to speak for themselves. And I heard your guest say that you couldn't have a molten metal underwater. Well, that's quite an error. You can. Welders weld underwater. All kinds of metals that may not exactly be burning but may be molten exist in a very hot state underwater, and you can't put out a hot metal Class D fire with water, foam, or any of the traditional firefighting methods you would use in an ABC fire, in a Class D fire, but the only way you could put it out is to cover it with sand and cut off the oxygen. But, you know, there's many things I take issue with. Another one is, you know, this nanothermite issue not being explosive. And I refer you to a place called the MIT in a magazine called Technology Review, where an article from MIT scientists is posted on the uses of nanotechnology. You get a much better bang for your buck, Walter K. Kevin Walter, Vice President of Nanoscale Technology, says nanometals can be produced in particles as small as 8 nanometers and then combined with other chemicals to create explosive materials, which can be used for non-military applications, including pyrotechnics and exploding explosives for mining. And it can also be used, according to Jane's expert on this, a fellow by the name of Oppenheimer, and I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with that name if they know the Manhattan Project, that the United States, Germany, and Russia are developing mini nuke devices that use nanotechnology to create much smaller nuclear detonations. So nanotechnology and nanothermites and other metals are used to make explosives, and that is a complete red herring and misnomer. And one of the other things I take issue to is the company that did the fireproofing for the World Trade Center, TRW. They make fire retardant materials. They took out the asbestos and replaced same. They also make nanothermites. So a chap called Arden Bement, a metallurgist, an expert on fuels and materials, nominated as NIST director by President Bush in October 2001, Deputy Secretary of Defense, former director of DARPA's Office of Material Science, and former executive at TRW, ends up being the guy who does the report on this, and he's done many other explorations into the use of nanothermites with NASA and other contractors for the military to use as weapons. TRW also got the contract for the 1993 bombing of the World Trade Center, had all the documents, the blueprints, and all the technical information, and this chap's relative is, actually it's his father, I believe, is the conspiracy debunker, Zenendik P. Bazant. And
okay, let me stop you right there, because I want her to respond to this, but let's go to the issue.
I do not engage in conspiracy theory, and everything he was saying is conspiracy theory. It's about who did what to whom when. I look at the evidence, and if you would like to look at the evidence, I share it with the world, and the evidence that was submitted in my federal QI-TAM case is available on my website, drjudywood.com. That's drjudywood, drjudywood.com. And if you put a /WTC, that will take you to my Cliff Notes page, where you can go through the whole load of pictures of evidence.
All right, let me just say one thing here also. Hanny in Korea, South Korea, emailed and said, please ask the guest why molten steel remained months after 9/11 if there was no thermite. Now, I do want your response to that one.
Thermite or thermate seems to be the ultimate boogeyman. First, you have to establish what happened. Is there molten metal? Then are people wading through it? You have people all over, the quote pile, and nobody burned up. There's reports of people being burned.
Well, I've seen pictures of molten metal. It appeared to be molten metal to me.
It doesn't mean it's hot. Again,
okay.
Everything that, things that are hot glow, but not everything that glows is hot.
All right, let me go back to George. George, ask her one question that you would like to get answered.
Well, I don't think MIT does much in conspiracy theory, especially at those levels.
Is that a question?
If I may ask my question. I remember 9/11 very clearly, and you talk about Hurricane Aaron coming and having some effects. And I do recall almost every picture, in fact, every picture I've seen of New York on that day, the sky was blue. Clear blue, not a cloud in the sky. If you go and follow the track of her...
Do you have a question?
Wait a second. Okay, he's asking the question about the, obviously, about the hurricane. I never heard about the hurricane. This is hurting, I think, the situation, because we can't verify some of your so-called evidence here. I mean, I'm trying to. I'm wanting
to. If you go to drjudywood.com/WTC, there's a whole page of evidence there. And, if somebody wants to say, well, I didn't look at the page, but I know it's wrong,
that we're saying hurricanes are things that are documented.
Yes.
And if you have it documented and nobody else does, then where did
the National Hurricane Center has it documented. This is another issue. Why is it not been publicized? Why weren't people warned that this is hurricane that was predicted to be bigger than Katrina. It was predicted to be bigger, and it, as it turns out, its energy system was greater than Katrina. For
okay,
4 days,
you're saying
was,
Erin, E-R-I-N?
E-R-I-N,
Erin.
Okay. Erin.
We're trying to look it up now. All right, ask her a question, George, then I got to let you go because I got other people
well,
who want to talk.
One quick one I'd like to bring up, too, because it never gets into the 911 lexicon, is the French use a demolition technique called virinage. Virinage means you take out support.
Okay, but ask her a question.
Let's deal with evidence. Let's deal with evidence, not who did what to whom when or who can do what to whom. Let's deal with evidence.
Yeah, well, this is evidence. They use this as a technique. And the Mr. Rodriguez said they sealed off a couple of floors in the World Trade Center. And
wait, you said he, so-and-so said. Wait a minute.
There is evidence. William Rodriguez was there, and he stated, and I believe him. I happen to believe William Rodriguez, that there was a sealed-off area.
And if you put explosives in that sealed-off area, you took out one
so
floor, the kinetic
theory.
Energy
that's
of the floors above
theory.
Would squash the building.
That's
this is very readily apparent on YouTube. You can see it online.
That's conspiracy
if you look up
theory. I do not engage in conspiracy theory.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, George, for the phone call. Let me move on to George in Indiana. George in Indiana, you're on the air. Go ahead, please. A firsthand witness there who's responsible for saving many of the lives in the tower. I don't think that's conspiracy evidence, and I would not myself not want to be found charging him with that.
But you're saying who did what about planting explosives wherever? That's a theory.
No, he didn't say that. He said there were two areas sealed off, two floors sealed off.
But the person who was calling in just now was talking about it was theorizing what explosives were put there by whom when. That is a conspiracy theory.
Okay, let's go to George. All right, let's go to George in Indiana. George, you're on the air. Go ahead, please, with Dr. Wood.
Yes, this is disinfo information. There's so much to go on. I just got 2 points. The firemen that were there fighting the fires, their boots were melting. There's YouTube videos of them telling them that their boots were melting. They said they looked down into the basement, and they saw molten metal running down the channel rails like a foundry. I think that is evidence because they were seeing it. Now,
okay.
The second thing, Dr. Stephen Jones has several peer-reviewed papers, and I think you know what that is, that there was nanothermite that was unexploded, found it in the dust particles on 5 or 6 different locations. You're not using evidence. You're a disinfo agent.
Now, wait a minute. We don't need to go with that.
Don't like the evidence, they tend to go to name-calling. But, okay, I don't go after name-calling, but I will ask this question. You know, and encourage anyone who believes, if they have a belief system, that their evidence is good, they are free to submit it to a federal case. They are free to submit it to a government agency.
Mm-hmm.
But I will warn you, it is a crime to submit fraudulent evidence or to defraud the government. And it is of great curiosity why, with all this talk about thermite, no one has submitted it to a government agency.
That is a very good point. That is an excellent point.
What I am talking about, my evidence of energy weapons, I submitted that to a government agency in March 2007. And from that, that was my act of blowing the whistle, I submitted a federal whistleblower case with that evidence. If this is, fraudulent disinfo, I would be held for treason.
Let me just add, I have been through the process of filing a KETAM case. As you all know, I've talked about it. Riley V. St. Luke's Episcopal Hospital is a KETAM case. I know what you have to go through. You have to actually meet with the Department of Justice before you can ever file the case so that they can make sure you don't have some kind of other agenda or reason for filing it. I've been through the whole process that she was through. I can really appreciate that. Why hasn't David Ray Griffin or why haven't some of the other people, Richard Gage or whomever, and I'm not saying they're wrong, I'm just saying why haven't they filed a KETAM case or why haven't they gone forward with this very same attack on whatever it was to be able to try and show their point in court? That's my only question. George in Indiana, are you saying that there's no way you believe it could be a directed energy weapon?
I think it may have been a combination of things.
Okay, good point. Excellent point. Now, wait a second. We're getting somewhere here. We don't know what the answer is right now. Let's be open. Hey, thank you very much, George in Indiana, for the phone call. We'll go to Bill in Pennsylvania next after this four-minute break. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the Power Hour. Thank you for joining us today on the Power Hour. Got my computer fixed. I am so indebted to my wonderful computer guy, Doug Breathauer. I really appreciate him. What an amazing job he did in getting me up to speed again. I want to just go back real quickly here and say that, yes, okay, it's 9:24 in the morning. We're talking about 9/11. Dr. Judy Wood is our guest. Andrew Johnson's going to be joining us in just a few minutes from the UK for his position on this. We just found out that at the National Hurricane Center, it talks about the longest hurricane in the 2001 time frame was September 1st to the 15th. September 1st to the 15th. That's the National Hurricane Center. All right, now, what does this mean, Judy? What does this mean if there was a hurricane, like you said, from the 1st to the 15th of September? What are you saying that means?
I'm not saying that particular data means, you know, everything. It's just, this is, you got to look at all of the data first before you jump to conclusions. But, you know, what do hurricanes do? Hurricanes have field effects. People talk about feeling a storm coming. You know, birds head for the hills. They run for cover. They go to caves or whatever, wherever they go hide. They don't sit in a tree and wait to get hit by a hurricane. Animals, including people, sense field effects from approaching storms.
Okay, but all right. But I want to cut to the chase because we're about out of time. You said that there was a large hurricane during that time. We didn't believe you. We checked it out. Sure enough, from the National Hurricane Center, you were right.
Why didn't we ever hear about it?
Okay, good point.
It wasn't on the morning news at 8:30 that morning.
Bingo. You're absolutely right. All right, let me go to Bill in Pennsylvania. Bill, you're on the air. Go ahead, please, with Dr. Wood.
Good morning, Joyce. I am so appreciative that you have this fine little lady on here today.
Thank you.
I have waited 9 years to hear these types of comments, and I'm not a scientist, but Dr. Woods, many of us have observed the same things that you have said, and none of it has made much sense. The buildings, for the most part, the upper levels, they did disappear. There is film upon film of that. And there were cars parked 2 and 3 blocks away that were literally fried. And yet there were people who ran right past them, and they never felt the heat.
Bingo.
Now, what was it? I'm not sure, but I'm suspecting what you said about Dr. Tesla and longitudinal waves. If you combine that with some of the information, there's not much available, but on scalar weapons.
Yes.
S-C-A-L-A-R?
Yes. Yes. Instead of using a particular name, because that leads to a bias, I look at the evidence,
mm-hmm.
and that is what the evidence leads to.
It does. And when you look at some of the other films, the ones that we all know, the usual films, but there's many other films of the buildings, and they did vaporize, dustify was your word, but they did. They literally just went away. And there were some buildings that were smaller than the Twin Towers off to the right side. And you could see those vaporize as those buildings were coming down.
Vaporize implies heat. That's why I say we need a new word for a new phenomenon.
Dustify.
Which is, dustify. There we go. Yeah.
And now who has this type of power? Well, the rumor was Russia has the most advanced system. China has a system, the United States has a system, but who knows who was in collusion with whom. But it's a new force, and Tesla knew that this type of thing could be done, and there's all kinds of other rumors about it. But when you look at what you're looking at, you're the only one I've heard on shortwave or mainstream media that has made this observation, and it's visible to many of us. It's just logic.
Look. Yes, look at the evidence and you see it.
Yes,
you know,
ma'am.
What I'm amazed at, and I thank you very much, Bill, for your comments and also for calling in today. What I'm amazed
at
is the reaction of people who are hearing something different than what they believed was their so-called truth. Is that when people hear different documentation or evidence, people are all of a sudden, that can't be, that can't be. Part of what we're all about on the Power Hour is empowering ourselves with facts and evidence and being able to change our opinions should something else happen. Now, I think there have been some statements that have been made today that are probably inaccurate on both sides. But I think the idea, though, is that we're looking for the truth. If we're all looking for the truth, then why are we fighting? There shouldn't be this infighting. There shouldn't be this kicking people out of certain groups because they didn't go along with the, you know, prevailing theory of how things happened. I have to say I really commend you for what you're doing, Dr. Wood. And though I don't know if I agree or not, because I don't know enough to agree or not yet, but I commend you for doing what you're doing and sticking with it. Now, I'm going to bring you back after this break because I think there's an unanswered question here that I want to get. And then we're going to bring on Andrew Johnson in just a second after we get back. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with the Power Hour. This is Joyce Riley. Welcome back to Power Hour. Thank you for joining us. It's 33 minutes after the hour. We've got another guest joining us today from the UK, and I appreciate his patience. We've kind of gotten off of, we've really gotten into this discussion. And so I'm going to bring on Andrew Johnson now. And I do, like I said, I do apologize for having taken so long to bring him on board. We really kind of needed to get to, there's a lot more information here than we can possibly want to get through here, believe me. And so, Andrew, I thank you very much for joining us in the Power Hour. Thank you so much for your patience today.
No, not at all. Thank you very much for inviting me to come and sort of speak on the program. I really appreciate it.
Certainly. Now, you are a UK researcher. You do support Dr. Wood's findings and the details of the weaponry you believe that was employed here. Now, you've written a number of articles documenting the developments of the cover-up, the censorship, and the controversy. And all that aside, though, the controversy, all of that aside, what is it that you believe that she, and I'm going to leave Dr. Wood on the air, is on target with that has caused you in the UK to adopt some of her findings?
Well, it's basically to do with the energy issue, and if you look at the whole energy issue in the destruction of the towers, it's very anomalous. I think as one of your callers, you know, I think just before the last break, was realizing that the way that the towers disappeared, is when you go back and look at that, it, you know, it's extremely unusual. And we were recently on a UK fringe TV program, myself and Dr. Wood. Dr. Wood appeared over Skype. And then we were able to show the video clip of the towers actually, you know, turning to dust. And there's one particular segment which is key to this, and that's been termed the spire. It's 70 columns of unsupported steel turning to dust. And this is really the key to the whole, observance of the energy issue. And I encourage people to go back and study the videos from different angles. And if you want to go and look at this Edge Media thing that we did, you'll see that clip in there, where you see this effect from about three or four different cameras, and we've got a still image sequence and all this sort of thing. So, you know, it really does go back to that one of those as fundamental points for me, because when that was discussed in the scholars group that I was part of, I could see it was really a flashpoint for setting people one way or the other.
All right. What is your background, Andrew? Give us a little bit of a feel for who you are.
Yeah, my background is in software engineering, which is basically sort of computer programming with a bit of design and stuff like that. So I did that for sort of a period of, well, about 20 years in total on and off. And really this, you know, teaches you to be very analytical and try and take things apart so that you can sort of fix things when they break or design things which are complicated. So, you know, that was really those sorts of skills that I was trying to apply to the research into 9/11. When I began that in really, I suppose, 2004. And I have to say that, you know, I can sympathize with what a lot of the listeners are feeling and how they're reacting, because, you know, I first sort of realized that the official story of 9/11 was false in about 2004. But it was really probably another 2 years before I began to see the sorts of points that Dr. Wood is making. And really, to be honest with you, unless you actually sit down and look at the pictures and go through the evidence, you know, you've really got to spend at least, at the very, very least, an hour looking at this, you know, and possibly, you know, many, many, many more hours. And what I've really tried to do in all of this, in working with Dr. Wood, is really, you know, use my own incredulity as a kind of focus and try to bring out the most things that I've found most compelling and the easiest to kind of digest. And, I've made some YouTube videos and this sort of thing, just to make it easier for people to actually get to the first st- step of what, you know, Dr. Woody's trying to explain. Because
okay, and let me ask a question here. Why the anger? I mean, I don't have anger when I hear what she is saying. I feel like, really, oh, that's something I didn't know. That's something I didn't think about. But how do you explain, psychologically, I don't want to say that word really, but how do you explain the vested interest in a certain, I mean, like George Freund, and I'm just asking you, George, you're a brilliant guy, absolutely brilliant. He does his own radio show in Ontario. But what is, why, how, help us understand the anger here.
I think there's several reasons for that, really. I think if you look at the way mainstream figures behave on TV when, you know, anybody comes along and questions the official story of 9/11, we've really experienced that same type of reaction among 9/11 researchers.
Yes.
I think because they feel settled that they've found, you know, the correct version of events, and then to have to, you know, go back again and realize that, you know, there is actually another layer of cover-up, and I certainly feel that I can prove this with the evidence that I've collected in these articles, which includes, you know, audio interviews with people and how they've changed what they've said and how they've tried to sort of cover up what we've said or twist it or muddle it up. And I've tried to document this very carefully. So I think it's this process of people's, you know, having to sort of realize that they've been scammed again, and that automatically thinks, well, you know, they think, well, I'm pretty clever. I can work things out. So I haven't been fooled again, you know. I went through this same process myself, and what I found with Dr. Wood is she has such a, you know, a very direct way of observing things, and she cuts through all this kind of, you know, the smog that's around with all these things that you've heard about steel being shipped to China and all these high temperature and all this, and, you know, when you actually spend time and look at what she's put on the table, You can only really, as I found it, come to the same conclusion or something extremely similar to what she's put on the table. You know, I've been looking at this for 3 years now, pretty intensively, and I've actually started to find links in this into other areas of research as well. So, you know, I'm convinced that she's absolutely 100% on the money. You know, and if I wasn't convinced of that, I wouldn't have spent you know thousands of dollars of my own money in various activities to try and sort of, you know, help people realize what this evidence is, you know, says and why it's significant, you know.
Okay, now here's the major question I'm going to ask both of you. Here's the unanswered question. All right, whether it is the aerosolization or the dustification or whatever term you want to use, secondary to an energy, direct energy weapon, or whether it was thermite, and explosions that were set intentionally, what difference does it make? And let me go to Dr. Wood. Dr. Wood, your response.
I had a student in early 2006 who told me that 9/11 was about free energy and about the cover-up of free energy. I had yet to appreciate what he was telling me. He was murdered soon after that. It turns out his uncle worked closely with Eugene Maloff, who was involved with the uncovering the cover-up of cold fusion, debunking. But he's right on the money that it is about free energy. Imagine how much energy we saw the effects of that day.
All right. It's all about free energy. It's about the use of a Tesla-like weapon, then, you're saying.
That could provide free energy to the planet.
That could provide free energy to the planet. So you're saying that it has something to do with wanting to cover up
that.
The free energy. Okay. All right. Let me ask the same question. All right. So what does all this difference mean? Or what difference does it mean to us? Why would you spend thousands of dollars on this, Andrew? And why do we care?
Yeah, well, I mean, really, what you find with the thermite thing is when you study it in detail and you find these connections between Steve Nee Jones, for example, who was the main proponent of the thermite theory in 2005, and that was when I got involved with the scholars group. But then soon after that, I think about 6 months or a year later, I learned that Steve Nee Jones published a paper on muon-catalyzed cold fusion the day before Pons and Fleischmann, who were the chemists who discovered the cold fusion process. And basically what Jones then proceeded to do, and this is documented in Dr. Eugene Maloff's book, Fire from Ice, so people can go and read this if they can get hold of a copy. It's out of print now, though. And he basically did what's called a limited hangout of cold fusion. In other words, he didn't say that cold fusion wasn't real, but he basically said that you'd never get any useful energy from it. Stephen E. Jones had got connections to Los Alamos National Laboratories, where they developed the A-bomb and all this sort of thing. You know, people can look into these connections for themselves. And so that's when the energy connection to me became clearer. And, you know, we hear a lot of talk on the internet and, you know, sometimes in the mainstream media about all these people who develop these wonderful new motors which, you know, will recharge their own batteries or, you know, will do all these wonderful things without any electricity or oil or run off water or whatnot. But we've never really seen them come into sort of mainstream production. And I think really this is partly because the people at the top who are in the know, who run everything, they know about the energy and they know how this physics, which was used to destroy the towers, they know how it all works. And so it's very important to them that they keep all of this free energy technology marginalized, suppressed, ridiculed. And, of course, nobody in the free energy community ever considers the possibility that this technology has indeed been weaponized. And the few that do consider that will not even look at the evidence that this was actually used on 9/11. And we've approached some of these people, you know, privately, and, you know, we've established something called 10-foot pole syndrome, which is where these people will just simply not touch and discuss the evidence, and they'll just basically stop, you know, corresponding, or they will just, you know, ignore it or whatever. And this has been almost universal. So, you know, it's going to be down to people to make their own decision on this, but they do need to look at the evidence before making a decision and not just assume that because what they've heard about Stephen E. Jones or what William Rodriguez has said about certain people, you know, that what we're saying must be incorrect, because you have to go back and look at the basic photo and picture evidence to make your own decision.
Okay. If, in fact, we have free energy, and if, it, as Tesla had demonstrated, if we have free energy weapons, which I think we can pretty well agree that with DARPA, with all the money in the world that DOD has, they probably have devised this. All right, then would it not be just a normal understanding then that they would have not used some type of explosive weapon that could have been found in the buildings a lot easier? They would not have used something that is more, people are more aware of, that they, if they wanted to bring these buildings down, they would have utilized some form of energy we weren't accustomed to, don't know about, and wouldn't believe in. Now, let me ask you that, Dr. Wood.
Yeah, and then you can ridicule it away, because as Andrew was nicely packaging, how free energy is marginalized. What have I been?
You have.
Marginalized. You mm-hmm. talk about it, you get marginalized. That's the M.O.
Okay. All right, let me go back to Andrew. Andrew, after all the work that you've done, you have probably seen that there are people that are being kicked out of groups in 9/11. They're being called names. They're being related to in very disrespectful ways. But is this fear that people don't want to address something? I mean, where is all the contention coming from and not the openness to listen to what she has to say?
Well, I think, you know, I've had various debates. For example, there's a 9/11 UK forum where we set that up in 2005. You know, people over here who are interested in, you know, starting to get a new investigation going or this sort of thing, or raising the awareness among British MPs about the questions about the destruction of the towers. And I've been attacked and ridiculed on that forum multiple times over, and a number of sort of false statements have been made about what Dr. Wood has said and what I've said, you know, and this sort of thing. And so, you know, you can see the sort of pattern here, and quite often these people won't discuss the evidence. And so what you end up doing is people have said to me, you know, they've said to me, well, this directed energy weapons research, it is quite interesting, but the problem is no one will believe it. So, you know, we shouldn't really discuss it, because if people are not going to believe it, then, you know, we're not going to get any attention focused on a new investigation into 9/11. And, you know, this is just nonsense, really, because what you're trying to do, are you trying to do something which is going to be popular, or are you going to try and do something to find the truth? You know, and I pointed out to these people that Dr. Wood has indeed done an independent investigation into 9/11. She's posted the results publicly. The funds for that investigation were from her own funds, so it was independent. All the details are available for scrutiny. There's full of accountability. It's been put in a legal framework, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So if you look at the criteria for a new investigation into 9/11, I would say that Dr. Wood's investigation fits perfectly all those criteria, and yet we don't see any, or probably hardly any, but I think I could say any, but I'll hedge my bets and say hardly any groups are discussing this investigation into 9/11.
I agree. And let me give you an example of an email that I got from Cora. She says, Judy Woods is well known as a crackpot, so naturally you invite her on. Her purpose is to make all 9/11 truthers look like crackpots, and she does a good job. This has been known for years. There are dozens of reputable people you could have on. Which side are you on, Joyce? And she says, that's why I don't listen to your program anymore. Well, Cora, I don't think you should listen, because this is a program for people that question and then question and then question. I don't know that anyone has the answer. I don't know that David Ray Griffin has all the answers. I don't know that Gates has all the answers. I don't know anybody has all the answers. What I know is, if they had all the answers, we might have gone forward with an investigation or with a case such as you did, Dr. Wood, with your Ketom case against several contractors. In fact, I wish you would list the contractors that were included in this and the reasons why you filed it against these people. Do you mind doing that?
It's a rather long list.
Some of the major ones, like SAIC, that we know about.
Yeah, Science Applications International, and then Applied Research Associates, who are developers and manufacturers of energy weapons. They also have, and I submitted this as in my court case, that they have a contract, or had at the time, a contract to know anything about every weapon of mass destruction that existed on or off the planet that was being developed. And to put them under oath, you know, they obviously know who done it.
Yes, and that was the point. In discovery on this case, in discovery, you're going to get a chance to depose them and for you to be deposed. So obviously you had some very good reasons to bring these people to the case. I mean, you know, it is not a small thing to file a federal case like this. Believe me, I know, been there, done that. And so for you to have done that, I have a lot of respect. I know you believe this, that it was a free energy weapon. I want to learn more about why you believe that, and I want to know more about free energy weapons. Now, which company or contractor in the United States would you, at this point, think might know more about directed energy weapons or directed energy being used for weaponry than anyone else?
Well, the person who headed up the contractors for the NIST report from ARA presented this material at engineering conferences, you know, on directed energy weapons.
They did, okay.
And so, yeah, they know what that. But also, this is not new technology. This is Nikola Tesla wanted to give the world free energy, but he didn't, because he was afraid it would be weaponized.
I think there is so much to what she's saying, ladies and gentlemen. I don't take one side or the other, but listen to what she's saying. We'll be right back after this 3-minute break. Stay tuned to the Power Hour. This is Joyce Riley. Welcome back to the Power Hour. 54 minutes after the hour, this is Joyce Riley. Thank you for joining us today. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking to Dr. Fred Bell. The subject will be mind control. I tell you, we just stay on the plain vanilla topics, don't we? Anyway, I just wanted to add that I think there's a lot of frustration here for maybe some of the words that Dr. Wood has used, or maybe you don't understand, or maybe she didn't present it maybe in a way that makes it comfortable for you to accept. That doesn't necessarily mean this is all wrong. I happen to think that we have a different scenario here, totally different scenario. And I want to tell Andrew Johnson that I'm sorry we didn't get to have him on more. I'd like to have him back on again, because this is all about being able to research, to question, and to challenge without these horrendous biases that people have. And I'd like for you to go to her website. Spend some time at her website. I think you're going to be shocked and amazed at what you find there. Now, let me go to Andrew Johnson, because, Andrew, I want to ask you if you would sum this up for us as to what was used, what happened during 9/11, and also why you think that why you think that no one wants to address what you and Dr. Wood have been saying.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, really, what we're looking at is Hutchinson effect technology. John Hutchinson is a Canadian scientist who's reproduced some of the research from Nikola Tesla. In doing so, he generated a number of effects, such as levitation, metals which bent, weird fires. And if you go and look at the WTC page, you'll see all of these effects in the evidence that Dr. Wood collected. And the important thing to realize is that Dr. Wood collected all this evidence before she stumbled on the Hutchinson effect. So in other words, she didn't think, oh, Hutchinson effect, let's match all the evidence to that.
Okay, let me just say you're saying Hutchinson effect, correct?
Hutchinson effect, yes.
Okay.
H-U-T-C-H-I-S-O-N. And John has his own website, thehutchinsoneffect.com. You can go and look at all the videos on there, documents. John was visited in 1983 by Colonel John Alexander from Los Alamos National Laboratories. So we know that they know about this technology. We know that they know it exists and it works. And the moment we put that on the table, we were attacked for doing that within hours of putting that on Ambrose Lane's broadcast. This is all what I've written up in the article that I've written up. So we're looking at energy technology. We know the general type of what it is. We know that it's based on field interference, interferometry, which has been used by John. So we're looking at a cover-up of this technology, which basically could transform the whole geopolitical structure of the whole world if it became into general usage, because we wouldn't need fossil fuels, we wouldn't need oil. So that's what's at stake here, really. And that really, when you think it in those terms, as I do, makes you understand why the cover-up is so powerful, and they're pulling out all the stops to keep people in a state of ignorance. That includes, if you ask me, this is very controversial for me to say this, but I think you mentioned your next guest is going to talk about that. To me, this is up to and including mind control that's been used to keep this secret. So, you can go and look at the evidence for this for yourselves and make your own decision. I'm happy to come on and talk about it again in more detail at any point. Anybody wants to check the evidence for themselves, and go to my website, which is checktheevidence.com.
Checktheevidence.com. Okay, we didn't have that listed. We need to get that on our website. Checktheevidence.com. We need to link to that. Let me just give you some of the last few messages I've gotten from email. It says, why the anger? Because they are discrediting the truth movement. No, they're not. Truth is about truth. It's not about one opinion or another. Then it says, Judy is not the easiest person to follow, but when she said Tesla, she got my attention. It may have been a sound weapon, as Tesla proved, as well as thermite. Bingo! What a good statement. Thank you for having this lady doctor on your show today. I do believe she is on to something. Thank you for bringing this out. Please have her come back on someday. Yes, we will. Thank you to Andrew Johnson. Thank you, Dr. Judy Wood. You both have gone out on a limb to say this, and I really do respect you for your research.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being on the show today. Listeners, it's all about being open-minded. We don't know the answers. We don't have the truth. You all have a blessed day. We'll see you tomorrow, and don't miss the Power Hour. You never know what we're going to discuss. Have a blessed day. We all love you at the Power Hour.